All right, guys, welcome back to another episode here of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
And Sean, today on, well, actually on this episode, we're going to be talking about Corona beers, right?
Yeah, wait, that's not right.
Our favorite. No, that's not.
That's definitely not in the top favorites. We're gonna start with the coronavirus panic.
Okay.
We don't really care about the virus. What we care about is the news and the language around it. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about, you know, is the media, how, not right or wrong. We're going to try to leave that in, you know, out of the conversation.
Right.
Try. but like,
it's going to be hard not to.
Let's take a closer, objective look at the way they use words to steer the conversation.
Yeah. So here's an example. Have we heard the word pandemic? How many times have you heard that this week?
A few, for sure. So,
I actually heard an association with Black Plague, which I was like, when I heard that, I was pretty floored because the comparison between the two are pretty amazing. If you want to, you know, go that stretch, but we'll get into that. So,
yeah. Especially you start, that's like comparing, you know, two eras of sports legends, right? It's just, it's not even the same time.
You can't do that. That's back in the day.
Yeah. That's not the same. So, before we get there, you pulled a fast one on me.
I know.
You switched up your beverage of choice.
Yep.
But I'm sticking with my original choice that I had planned out for today, for this episode.
All right.
So just because it's kind of unique, I've been kind of holding off and holding this one back. So I think it's a pretty, it may taste awful, but like I couldn't resist it when I saw it on the shelf, and I've been waiting literally 3 weeks to crack this one open.
So, okay. Well,
we'll see.
It's a nice tease.
Yeah. But so what do you have though? Since you went off the rails. You didn't have it strong enough on the last episode as we were recording this.
It's been a bad day. It's been a tough day. So I went super strong today. So on the last one, I had that Goose Island Bourbon County brand stout, which honestly, I'll have to hold this up because I actually know I haven't finished it. I'm still working on that. But
you're going to do the old depth charge thing?
But in the meantime, I'm going to bring another guest on. This one, I'm doing a little bourbon. I'm mixing a little bourbon with my bourbon barrel stout. But this one is a Wilderness Trail. Okay.
Wilderness Trail.
I'm going to tell you, I picked up a bottle of this, and they've got three different versions of this particular whiskey. I picked this up during the holidays for a friend of mine. He had a New Year's Eve New Year's Eve party. I brought it to that, and we were smoking some stogies by a fire out in his back, and smoking these nice cigars, having a glass of this stuff, and it's just amazing. It's a nice balance. It's got a nice sweet balance to it. I thought Elijah Craig was my go-to until I had this back during the holidays, and so
wow. So what? You said there's three different types. Which one is this?
So this one is the bourbon. This is just the straight bourbon whiskey. They also have a rye for any of you rye lovers out there. They've got a bourbon rye whiskey. It's 113 proof, so a little bit higher.
Yeah.
And then they've got the another version of the bourbon whiskey. It's the same, but it's bottled in bond. Do you know what that means?
I do not.
Damn it. I was hoping you would, because I don't. But this is just the standard. This is the go-to that I went to during the holidays. It's good stuff. I'm willing to pay.
That's a fresh bottle then, right?
It's a fresh bottle. Fresh bottle. I actually, about 10 minutes ago, just took off the plastic off the top. So now I got to pop it.
I was going to say, it's pretty full to have enjoyed over the holidays. So
No. That bottle is long hence gone. So this is really good. Just to give you some perspective, for Elijah Craig, I usually spend It's usually about $32 a bottle, which I'm happy to pay because I like that. And that's not, I mean, that's pretty cheap for a good bourbon. Yeah. This is more about 40, this is probably about $50, $49, $50.
Yeah. So one shelf up.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. That's not too bad.
No, it's really good. And it's
kind of the top of my price for most, you know, I don't like to go above 50 unless it's a special occasion.
That's right.
Yeah. 50 and under. It's kind of anywhere in that 30 to 50 range is good.
Mm-hmm. So if you can find it, I'm pulling up their, on their website, they have a map and they are in Texas. So it shows the states that they're currently in right now. So Texas is one of those.
All right. Well, so we're going to Total Wine this weekend.
Alabama is out. Mississippi is out. Arkansas is out. Oklahoma is out. So those surrounding states near you are completely out. But but you guys are safe.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what I got going on here. So this is from Carrollton, Texas, which is up near Dallas.
Okay.
And it is a Imperial Milk Stout. Mm-hmm. But... you know, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
But we've got a kicker to it. Uh-huh. So this is, it's called, so the brewing is Three Nations is the brewing company. And I guess that's because of the name. So it's a Mexican chocolate Imperial Milk Stout.
Okay.
So
Mexican chocolate.
So I'm not sure where the Three Nations come in or mm-hmm. how that fits, but I didn't do that much research. Mm-hmm. It's about an 8.3% alcohol, but it's got a very bright Mexican can to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I feel like Mexican chocolate that might have a little kick at the end. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah. Right.
The label makes me think it's got a little kick because of the red, you know, just maybe it's got a little spice to it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Really smell the chocolate. Definitely smell the chocolate. Like it's very chocolatey smelling.
Right.
Got that Imperial pour, like just really kind of thick.
Yep.
There we go.
Ooh, that's nice and thick.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, cheers.
Cheers. I feel like I need a cigar right now.
So that has probably got the most chocolate, like pure chocolate taste of any beer I've ever had. Mm-hmm. Like it's just a really, I'm not really getting like the Mexican chocolate part. So I'm not sure what I should be expecting or not expecting there, mm-hmm. but it's definitely got kind of a Hershey bar finish to it.
Oh,
like it's got a nice clean milk chocolate feel to it. So, which I guess a milk stout with chocolate, I guess that would make, I don't know. Guess that makes sense. Hey, it works. Like it's pretty rich. It's more of that dessert type.
Right.
I don't think I'd go, I wouldn't be drinking a six pack of this for sure, but you know, it's a nice around the fire pit or something like that. It'd probably pair great with s'mores.
Oh,
that'd be a good pairing.
S'mores by the fire and one of those, man.
Yeah. Mexican chocolate, Imperial Milk Stout.
And you said that's more because I, when you said Mexican chocolate, I didn't associate Hershey's with that. I was thinking more of a...
Well, I was thinking of spice too, but spicy. I don't taste any spice.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was expecting like a little kick like you get in some of the chocolate bars you can buy now. Yeah. You know, where they have that little flake of...
Little habanero or chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah. But didn't get that, but it's still good. So I guess it's kind of like Mexican Coke. Maybe it's just the sweet. Maybe they use the Mexican sugar or whatever. Says, sit back and savor the indulgence of our Mexican chocolate Imperial Milk Stout, the perfect beer to warm you up and take you back to the time when you were abuita would lovingly make you a warm cup of hot chocolate. So it's supposed to be more like hot chocolate, I guess. So
hot chocolate
beer. Anyway, but it's good. It's good. So, all right, man, let's roll into the episode here.
And, before I need to mention, because I didn't know what bottled in bond was. So naturally my curiosity caused me to seek this out. So here I am, I'm looking. So a bottled in bond is when two special releases are in one bottle. So,
So it's kind of like a Labradoodle.
Yeah, Labradoodle, which this is not. This is their standard release. So their normal release. So
you got the pure purebred, not the pure, fake purebred.
So right? I guess it's like if you're talking like in Scotch, it's maybe blended, more of a blended type. Yeah. So
yeah,
not a single malt.
Yeah. So I think it's funny that we have designer names for mutts now, you know, with
Labradoodles.
And there's like all kinds of new ones coming out since that worked. Like, oh, we could just breed two random dogs and sell them for the same price as a regular purebred.
So cool. What else do we have? Labradoodles, golden doodles. What's the new trend?
I saw something, a pug in something.
Oh, okay. Pug doodle.
I don't know. And I wasn't, it was another like small dog. Maybe it was a, I don't know, but I guess that's all dogs kind of came from that world. Sure. Right. I mean, that's how breeding works. You kind of, boxers were bulldogs and something else. So, all right. So I'm going to pull up, I texted you this image and we'll kick off the conversation with this. So I was, you know, obviously the stock market has been, as we're recording this, it was down because of the whole coronavirus, scare, panic, propaganda, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, so it's all over the Facebook, it's all over everything right now. Everybody's worried about
disaster. Yes.
It's crazy. So, and then I was also with a group of people, with capitalism.com this week. We were having our mastermind event, you know, so there's some investors there and it came up yesterday. So I was looking at the, so everybody was always checking their phone, looking at all the red numbers on their phone. I was like, it doesn't actually matter. Mm-hmm. But so I pulled up, as we were thinking about the show, I pulled up Yahoo Finance and like in big red banner across the top, it says market rout.
Yeah.
Wall Street in historic sell-off. Mm. And then the subhead below it for the picture. And then there's this picture of like three guys. I'm showing it on the YouTubes here, but like, you know, there's this picture of like three guys looking up at the monitors at the trading floor and just utter, you know, shock and horror. I was like, oh my God. One guy's got his mouth open, like literally like, and you know, it's like, and then it says stocks extend historic rout on virus panic. So I looked at that and I was like, that's some very good wordsmithing. Mm-hmm. If you want to play into the narrative that there is actually a panic.
Yeah.
And I was talking with RC who.
I was about to mention this would have been a great episode to have RC.
Yeah. Yeah. So he and I did a podcast yesterday, kind of, and RC runs the company fearlesswealth.com. And we were talking about, you know, some of this stuff and just how triggered people are and how these words just like keep you in a state of having to tune in to the news. Mm-hmm. So this is very much by design to keep you tuned in because it's an advertising platform. And if there's not eyeballs on it, then they're not making as much money as when there is eyeballs on it. And when things are going really well, you don't really check your stock numbers as much as you do when things are going bad.
Right.
And they want you to stay tuned. Just like when when the Weather Channel, when a blizzard comes across the country, like you're glued to the Weather Channel, you know, and I'm sure their advertising rates go through the roof at times like that. So I just thought it might be fun to just look at, you know, take a little bit lighthearted, objective look at, from a persuasion standpoint, what they're doing.
Yeah.
And you found some articles, but you know, in that one sentence, stocks extend historic route on virus panic. Mm. So first of all, there's historic, right? So big, like long-term, you know, is what that say, route. Mm-hmm. Like you don't just pick the word route randomly. Like you've got your thesaurus open if you're using the word route.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not a word I've seen used to describe, you know, a fall in the stock market very often, if ever. Mm-hmm. And then of course you've got the word panic. So if we were being more journalistic, like we could take that and we would say stocks continue losses.
Sure.
On virus news.
Yep.
Much less triggering, mm-hmm. still true, still informative, but no, they had to pick historic route on yep. virus panic.
Right. Yep.
And it's easy to, it's easy for us to, and then it says right below that coronavirus fears persist.
Yeah.
Well, of course they persist because you keep talking about it.
It's brought up on a daily, hourly, you know,
minute by minute.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I mean, how can we not think about it when you're pushing it in our face?
Yeah. It's like the seatbelt ding on your car. It's like ding, 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 yep. ding. And then it gets faster if you don't put your seatbelt on. It feels like that's what's going on right now. But, so I threw out this text to you and as a topic today, and then you went and found an article that kind of talked about what's going on.
Yeah.
So let's dive into that a little bit.
Yeah. So I was interested because I'm always interested in the way that the media, in when I say media, media is a broad term in this day and age, but let's quantify that as the news media, the traditional media, newspapers, which are failing by the day. And also the
so when you say media is a broad term, you're not saying media is a woman. You're just saying it's a very covers a lot.
It covers a lot. Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes. Just want to make sure.
Yeah. But I'm going to specify it. I'm going to be more specific and say news media, the traditional news media outlets. I guess I would say.
Okay.
So our news anchors, you know, our news pundits on CNN and MSNBC and Fox and all of those guys. And then our newspapers, you know, and our, you know, online, newspapers today, which I guess most people gather their news from, you know, if you go to a site like Drudge Report, you know, that's talk about hyperbole. I mean, every headline that you see on there is,
yeah, you know, and Yahoo's the same way. You know, they got all their subcategories. They've got finance.yahoo, sports.yahoo, yep. and any one of those that you go to. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at the finance, you know, markets slammed this week on fears of coronavirus spreading. Mm-hmm. How to manage your retirement in a volatile market, which is true. It's volatile, but I mean, how you manage your retirement doesn't really change. If you're doing it right, it doesn't really change in a volatile market or not. I mean, it's just, you know, it's, yep. and yeah, it's just headline after headline, image after image, like the stock photos they're pulling have a very definite emotion. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I mean, if you want people to stay on your platform, it's certainly an effective tool to do it. My point of this show is that we need to be aware of what's being done, mm-hmm. Both from a marketer standpoint to understand it. And then, you know, just for our own, you know,
sure.
own well-being.
Yeah.
So what'd you find in the article? Cause you found a juicy article. It sounds like.
Yeah. So you can find it and we'll post this on our show page, but it's called, it's actually from Stanford. So we're not pulling some conservative, right wing article or anything like that. This is straight from, Stanford. You can find it at stanford.edu, but it's the media's use of propaganda to persuade people's attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. One of the things that I highlighted in here, and there's some really cool, so they break it down by case studies in this article. So I recommend mm-hmm. that you read it. But it's talking about, one example it talks about is the how the media uses lumping. And we've talked about this, I believe we've talked about this on some past episodes, but how you lump groups together. And it takes away, when you do something like lumping, it takes away any individuality to the one that you're talking about. So for instance, it gives one example of how the media used Pakistan and kind of lumping them with all Islamic nations. And so it was a tactic to, it says, despite Pakistani attempts to disavow the notion of an Islamic bomb, American media has been using the term rather liberally as a propaganda tactic to dehumanize. This involves lumping a group together to take away individuality. And the reason why this is effective is because we systematically blur distinctions and insist that the enemy remain faceless so that any acts are done not against men, women, and children, but a mass identity. So let's, all right, let's use that example with the coronavirus. So it's kind of a faceless, right? It's like a faceless enemy. We can't put a name, so we can lump this to be, okay, this is the problem out here. So we can start to lump it with terms like pandemic. We can start to use, I've heard associations with the bubonic plague or the black plague, which is completely insane compared to that, you know, based on if you know any history of the black plague, you know, we're nowhere close to that. Different
times. Not even this. Yeah. In different times. So there's different systems in place to
to
short circuit some of that. And,
here's that lumping. They like to lump. So it's a way of lumping. Okay. Let's associate this with something that's been totally, disastrous. What's the last known disastrous, disease that really, you know, completely changed the Western world? I mean, the last one that we know of was the bubonic plague.
And like compare that to like what they're not lumping it with. I saw somebody kind of put together the big flus of the past, you know, decade or two.
Right.
Just to prove the point, like this happens all the time. And like, we forget, like it's big in the moment.
Right.
And then all, you know, if you look back 10 years, it wasn't actually a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. So check out this list and see if you kind of remember the panic and notice that they're not comparing it to any of these because they all ended up being non-events for the most part. So 2004 was SARS.
SARS, yep.
2008 was the avian or bird flu.
The bird flu, yeah, exactly, the bird flu. I remember that.
2010 was the swine.
Swine, oh yeah, I remember the swine.
Yeah, 2012 was the MERS.
Mm-hmm.
MERS. 2014 was Ebola. Remember that went crazy for a while. Everybody was like, oh my God, there's somebody with Ebola in the apartment. Yep. And it's like, I think it was up here in Dallas. Somebody was in an apartment and world was freaking out. 2016 was the Zika virus.
I remember the Zika. Yeah.
2018 was the Ebola again.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's literally just about every 2 years, 4, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20. Mm-hmm. By the way, all election cycle years.
Interesting. Is that not?
Just throwing that out there.
Well, I'm glad you hit it because I wanted to bring that up as well because it is quite interesting. Yeah.
But you notice like in the moment, all of those felt incredibly scary and the words used to describe them were all very big, very scary words. But now they're not going to compare Corona to Ebola because we survived that.
Yeah.
So what do? They have to go, like you said, they have to lump it with something that was tragic because these past ones aren't going to push the right buttons.
Right.
Like we need somebody to really panic. So let's go back to bubonic plague or black plague or, you know, whatever.
AIDS, we need perspective. Like, comparisons.
You know, like you're starting to hear them talk about how this is not the typical flu. It's spread differently. It's more like a, you know, autoimmune disease. Like you're hearing all kinds of stuff, right? Because they're trying to make it bigger and lump it with bigger things so that it has more power to persuade and engage people.
Yeah. And naturally, when we lump something to one of the most disastrous, you know, we've talked about this. Here's a persuasion tactic the media uses. When we lump it to the most disastrous disease that we've seen bubonic plague. That was back in the, 15? Was it 15?
Something like that, yeah. 15.
Okay, so not so recent, but it's probably one of the most disastrous that we've known. You know, in any time less.
And that's even more reason to use it.
Yeah,
sure. Right? Because you don't know about it.
Right.
Like you've heard of it, but you don't actually know that much about it.
Right.
Whereas if, like I said, if we went with Zika or swine or avian, like everybody's remembered those enough once, like everybody's forgotten about them for the most part. But if you were to use that, they'd be like, oh yeah, but that was fine. Like it was scary in the moment, but we were fine. The black plague is still scary.
Yeah.
Right. Cause plague's a better word than flu anyway. So
yes.
Surprised they haven't called this the corona flu, the corona plague instead of virus, because right. that would be much scarier. Maybe it'll get there if we hold on another week, but Super Tuesday's coming up. The news cycle will shift and coronavirus will suddenly disappear from, exactly. from the face of the planet.
Okay. So I just pulled up the Black Death. Okay. So it was 13. This is okay. So I was a little ahead. It was 1347 to 1351. Everybody should know that. But yeah, 75 to 200 million people resulted in the deaths of 75 to 200. Okay, that's a wide margin. Okay, anywhere from anywhere from 10 to about 100,000, somewhere around there. You know, 75 to 200 people. That's kind of a stretch, but a lot of people died. That's the big thing.
I mean, 75 million to 250 million. Yeah, that's we're getting into a lot of millions.
Yeah.
Either way.
But,
and that's when the population was probably, I don't know what it was in there, 1,300.
Right.
I'm not sure the census was real accurate back then, but
sure.
Say it was a billion people even, which I doubt it was even that much.
So here's something interesting. So we're going to talk about the hyperbole of Corona to, and relating that to the Black Death. Okay.
Okay.
And so when you associate something is with one of the worst disasters in human history, so people are going to say, like we've talked about before, you know, how Trump uses a lot of his persuasion tactics, associating something as that's the worst ever. You know, I heard him say, like in one of the recent debates, the Democratic debates, where he said Bloomberg, that was like, I think it was Bloomberg's first debate where he just got hammered.
Yeah,
and he said that was the worst performance ever of anybody in a debate. I think that was what he tweeted in so many words. Yeah. So people naturally associate, okay, well, that's bad, but is it the worst? You know, and so you start to question that. And so
you question the, we talked about this in a previous episode, you question the biggest claim.
Right, right.
But you accept the smaller claim.
Exactly.
So it must be bad. It may not be worst ever, but it must have been bad.
Right.
Without even seeing it, without knowing anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and that's how hyperbole works. So,
so you claim it. So you associate, when you associate the coronavirus with the worst plague in recent history, I guess you'd call it recent, in probably human history.
Mm-hmm.
When you associate that, a lot of people are going to say, well, it's bad. You know, it's not that bad, but you know, it could be bad.
Yeah.
But there's no way it's going to be that bad. You know, you're talking about one of the biggest disasters, and you know, and there are so many factors in that. But my gosh, when you start comparing it to that, people associate, okay, they come up to that level and then they come back down a little and they say, well, it can't be that bad, but it's probably bad if they're comparing it to that, you know.
Yeah. And where they settle, though, is still higher than where they were previously thinking.
Right. So it's again
a scale of disaster.
Yep. It goes back to framing, you know, so that's exactly what they're doing.
What else did you pull from that article?
You know, so I mentioned earlier that the context of the article was to associate Pakistan with a lot of the other, whereas Pakistan shouldn't have been lumped in with some of the other Islamic states at that time.
Right.
But they were. They were demonized for that. So there's another one. It's the last one that I haven't really gotten into, which that's why I want to link to this so our listeners can see it. But it's called The Dune Effect, Pre-Programming and Commitment and Consistency. You ever seen the movie Dune?
Yeah, been a while. But yeah, it's a long movie. Remember that. Like it's really long. Don't watch it on FX because it'll be like 14 hours long if you put it on FX. Yeah, so I'm down to that part with you. Mm-hmm. So what is the Dune effect? It says that those who control the media control the opinions of the people.
Right.
That's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think if you're watching and you're paying attention, you can see absolutely how the media, even if you don't agree that they control the opinion, they definitely control the narrative.
Yeah.
That's whatever, like, whether you think coronavirus is a big deal or not, we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
On this podcast. It's all over Facebook. It's all over everything, Twitter. So it doesn't matter which side you fall down on. We're talking about it,
yeah.
Which then furthers the, you know, furthers the conversation about it. You know, so yeah, we bought into the hype. Mm-hmm. You know, we like to think we're more intelligent than the media. So we're going to say we know what they're doing, but yet here we are talking about it. So it's kind of funny actually.
Yeah. So yeah, I think in this case where they're talking in this one case study where they're the media is trying to, you know, demonize nuclear technology. So, mm-hmm. In this case, it's fascinating because again, going back to association, the media is really good at associating nuclear technology as, you know, as being bad. Right. And so it's easy to lump that to, things we're familiar with, nuclear war, you know, nuclear technology, nuclear war. So people just, you know, can associate the two because those are easy to lump. You know, you choose words that are easy to lump. Nuclear war. Well, nuclear technology. That's
right.
That could be the result.
Yeah. And it's, you know, they're kind of doing the same thing right now. 5G, right, is becoming controversial in some health circles and other mm-hmm. places. And they're like, 5G is a microwave or a millimeter wave. Mm-hmm. So it's going to do the same thing to humans that microwaves do to chicken meat or whatever, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So they're starting, because this is a new level of technology, the people that were previously talking about how dangerous cell phones were going to be are now talking, well, this is the next level. Like, we may not have been right about that one, but this is definitely worse. And, you know, there's some definite science that says maybe it is dangerous and maybe it does cause mood and, you know, a lot of other stuff. And there's certain enough, what's it called when it's linked but not actually linked? There's certainly enough to kind of correlate. It's not real correlation, but there's enough going on around it mm-hmm. over the past 30 years that you could make an argument that, oh, maybe cell phones are bad or, you know, all the waves going are causing us to get more depressed because people are more depressed. Mm-hmm. So is it the waves or is it the fact that we're always on our phone and we're not talking to people? Is it the work? Is it the fact that more people work from home? Is it, you know, people are using headphones in the office because it's open floor plan and you can't get any privacy. So then it creates, like, there's so many things it could be mm-hmm. that it's hard to say that it is this.
Sure.
Because we don't live in a bubble, in a controlled experiment.
Right.
But like you said, and like this article is saying, if you want to make a case, you just link,
mm-hmm.
you lump, I guess is the way they're saying it.
Yep.
You lump it together with something that sounds similar. Mm-hmm. And it just forces the brain to say, okay, I understand that this sounds the same. Right. So yeah, let's put those together.
Right.
And you know, that's one of the secrets of copywriting is you have to break a lot of those lumps
sure.
to get a point across.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want people lumping you in with all your competitors.
Yep.
So you have to figure out how to break those lumpings. I think Michael Masterson, he called it the categorical imperative. Like once people kind of think they can lump you in with something, then they do. Yeah. As soon as they think they can lump you with a certain type of offer, a certain type of product, they'll put you in it.
Yep.
So, you know, the media uses this stuff and then we're trained to respond to it that way. So as a marketer, as a persuader, we have to know mm-hmm. That so that we can either use it to our advantage or learn how to break it.
And I'm starting to
break it. One way you break it is you just call it out.
Yeah.
Like you say, just say, look, here's what's going on. You may think I'm this, but actually I'm not. I'm this. you know, that's how I think as business people and marketers and just in persuasion in general, we need to understand that someone is always trying to persuade us one way or the other for one reason, for their own means or another.
Yep.
And we just need to be aware of it. But it, you know, it's also a good example, a learning example to see, notice the difference. What I wanted to point out for this episode was like, really look at the headlines as they're coming out and notice how the words they're using really craft a very clear, vivid, strong picture and do the same thing for your product, but in a, you know, in the positive way, or in, you know, even if you want to tap into the pain, that's fine.
Right.
But just, they're using strong verbs, strong adjectives, strong adverbs, you know, good, just really good. Like they're breaking open the thesaurus, like I said earlier. So like I'm looking at, I just typed in coronavirus in Google and the top three results, coronavirus spreads to more countries as markets take historic tumble. So historic and tumble are the two kind of, you know, words that are like tumble. Trigger words.
Yep.
Coronavirus live updates as epidemic spreads, White House accuses media of ... So accuses is the key word there. Mm-hmm. Right now we've got some type of us against them.
Yeah.
They're hiding something.
Right.
Right. So it's, you know, that's the key word there is accuses, and it's a trigger word.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is live updates. Second coronavirus case of unknown origin confirmed in California. So here it's the unknown origin. That's the scary phrase in that article.
Yep.
Because if it's unknown, oh my God, it could be from anywhere.
Right.
Maybe it's in my city. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's in California. So it's closer now.
Right.
And that was 21 minutes ago. So from the Washington Post.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. Like Washington Post, Washington Times. I mean, these three were probably the more, most people consider these three the more liberal of the three.
Oh yeah.
CNN, easily. New York Times and Washington Post.
Yeah.
But you know, no coronavirus testing kits available now in Florida. Mm-hmm. Well, crap. I didn't even know there was a testing kit, but now you're telling me there's not any. Like, oh my God, that must be really bad. Everybody's buying.
Right.
Them. Well, maybe
I had no idea there was a testing kit. That's crazy.
Yeah, like, and maybe there weren't, maybe there's like three, you know, like, cause nobody needed them.
And now there's none.
Yeah.
It goes from three to zero.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and if you don't take a step back and realize what's going on, it's super easy to get swayed by this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's a good point.
Just crazy.
Yeah. This, so the summary of this article down below, it says they've listed ways that are most relevant to defending against media propaganda.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So one is that be sensitive to situational demands, however trivial they may be. And, and that may be in groups, pressures, symbols of authority, slogans, commitment. So this applies in every situation that you see. And we talk about Trump. Trump is a master of propaganda sometimes and persuasion. A lot of it's not true, but it certainly, we're just saying how it helps him sometimes. And in this sense, it helps, you know, the media is trying to get their effective in getting their message across. But the, you know, the answer to that is don't believe in simple solutions to complex personal, social, and political problems. It says, as with the media coverage of Pakistan, as I was talking about, it is usually easier for the reader to let an article tell him what to believe instead of using, thorough information presented to us so that we can derive our own solution. So understand that whenever you're reading or listening or watching something, that there's never a simple, especially in this case, the world's a huge place.
Yeah.
So to boil it down into a simple solution is pretty asinine if you think about it, because we're dealing with hundreds of millions of people across the world and
with different living conditions, different health
exactly
states of health, like all kinds of factors.
Yep.
genetics are different from one continent to the other. You know, that's how the plague, one of the reasons the plague was so powerful, because it was introduced into a new, you know,
right.
a new, not race, but, you know, you go from, I don't remember the details exactly, but I remember it was like, okay, this genetic makeup had not experienced this. So they had no immunity to it.
Right.
And that's one reason it was so powerful. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, same thing happened when European settlers came over to America and then
right.
made a lot of Native Americans sick because they weren't used to it, vice versa.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, it's like, just be aware of all this stuff is happening, but also at the same time, like, look at how you can use these things ethically mm-hmm. in your own marketing.
Yeah.
And or know that this is what you're up against, that as this gets used more and more in people, you have a certain part of your population that has learned to be skeptical. So you have to answer these questions. Yeah. And if you can answer them, and sometimes if you can just be the rational voice in the room mm-hmm. and point this stuff out, people will be like, oh, yeah, that I can see why that's actually not such a big deal.
Right.
And that's... we talked about RC earlier mm-hmm. With fearlesswealth.com. We have this acronym that we use with his, you know, with his clients, and it's called FIT, and it stands for filter information, mm-hmm. identify emotions, and then take appropriate action.
Okay.
And most people who make bad decisions, investing or otherwise, it's because they have not learned to filter information.
Right.
They don't have the tools to help them filter information. And as we get more and more and more bombarded by information, mm-hmm. you know, knowledge is no longer power. Like, there's so much knowledge and information around.
Right.
The power moving forward, I think, is going to be in the ability to filter the information.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, people that can help others do that, or the people that can do that for themselves mm-hmm. will be the ones that have control.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so if you want to be at the top of your game, top of your field, like, learn to filter the information that's coming mm-hmm. at you, and either do that for other people, help them see it, you know, whatever. We kind of went all over the place with this a little, yeah. I mean, this is a little all over the place, but I think it's good for people to kind of take a step back, even though yep. we're in the business of persuasion. Mm-hmm. And most people listening are in the business of persuasion. It's good to remember that everybody else is trying to persuade us too. Like,
all the time.
It's not a one way thing where yep. we're the only ones out there persuading. Yep. So
absolutely.
Just keep your head on a swivel out there, people.
Be aware. Yeah.
Be aware. So this was our public service announcement there for the year. That we're trying to look out for you. So yep. yeah, slow down, look at the techniques they're using, look at the words they're using, and then figure out how you can use that for yourself, mm-hmm. Either as a protection or as a tool to persuade, you know, whoever you're trying to persuade.
Absolutely. Good stuff. All right, guys. All right. Well, that wraps things up. As always, you can find us over at Persuasion by the Pint. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear from you. But until then, Sean, it's been fun. And we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.